We're going to call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:05 on Wednesday, March 11th. Present are Representative Millet, Representative Lynn, Representative Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Chair Ledoux. Please silence your electronic devices. Thank you. We have two items before us today. First off, a hearing for Governor Walker's appointee to the Commission on Judicial Conduct, George Boatwright, and then we'll finish with one new bill, HB 75. First up, we'll have the hearing the qualifications for Mr. Boatwright and recommending that his name be referred to the body for consideration. I will remind the committee that our job here is only to review the history and qualifications of Mr. Boatwright. There will be no vote before or against his confirmation in this committee today. Committee members should feel free to ask questions as they arise, but bear in mind that we are not going to be voting on his qualifications, only reviewing them. Is Mr. Boatwright online?
Yes, here.
Thank you, Mr. Boatwright. Thank you for being willing to serve. Could you begin by identifying yourself for the record?
My name is George R. Boatwright.
And I see, Mr. Boatwright, that you have a resume here. Is there anything in particular on your resume that you would like to point out to us?
Primarily, my experience in law enforcement with the court system, I think that's probably the most relevant.
Okay. That would seem pretty relevant. Do we have any questions for Mr. Boatwright? And I'll note here that Representative Foster has joined us. We're in the middle of hearing from George Boatwright, who is the governor's nominee for Commission on Judicial Conduct. And so not hearing any questions. Representative Keller.
Yeah, thank you. George, why are you doing this? That's a lot of work, and we appreciate your volunteering, but just give us a little bit of what's driving you, if you would.
Well, my entire life I've been somehow or another involved in public service, as you can see by looking at my resume. I've been retired for nearly 3 years now, and frankly, I need something to do that's positive and has some meaning, and I think this is a good venue to do that.
Thank you.
In your professional career in law enforcement, have you had the opportunity to appear, I suppose, before many of the judges?
Yes, but you know, most of the judges I've dealt with are long since retired or moved on to doing other things. There are a few left that I'm familiar with, from my time as Chief of Police in Palmer. But as far as having any real direct contact or interaction with any of the currently serving judges, probably not.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Boatwright. We appreciate your willingness to serve, and we also appreciate that you're coming making the time to come before the committee today. So now I would like to hold.
Wait. You want a motion?
No. I would like to open up public testimony. Is there anybody in the audience or online that would like to testify with respect to Mr. Boatwright? Well, I don't see anybody in the audience. I understand that there is somebody in the Anchorage LIO.
Yes, there is.
Okay. I see it's a Charles McKee. Mr. McKee, if that is you, could you identify yourself for the record and tell us whom you're representing?
My name is Charles McKee. and I'm representing myself.
Thank
you. Went before I, may I continue?
Certainly. Go right ahead. Proceed.
I went before the Judicial Conduct Commission, and then after that, it was announced that the judge was retiring from that bench, and then you're looking for an appointment, which is the man before you previously gave testimony. Now, I indicated at that time to that commission that they need to have oath, bond, and commission on file with the clerk of court. After 30 days, they're an imposter. That's federal law. That's 1863 Act of Congress signed by Lincoln. Of course, Alaska is questionable as to whether it's a district or a territory or an actual bona fide state, but nonetheless, they have to abide by law unless it's been amended, and I haven't heard of such. But they have to have an oath, bond, and commission on file. After 30 days, they're classified as an imposter.
All right. Well, that is very interesting to hear, Mr. McKee, and we really thank you for your testimony. Thank you for making yourself available. Seeing or hearing no further people who want to testify, I'm going to close public testimony. May I have a motion?
Madam Chair.
Thank you, ma'am.
Move that we move George R. Boatwright's application to the full body for consideration, understanding that our vote here is not an indication of how we might vote on the confirmation.
There being no objection, Mr. Boatwright's name was advanced from the House Judiciary Committee. Brief at ease to sign the paperwork. On record again, and the next item up for today is HB 75, and Representative Telton.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for hearing HB 75. HB 75 is essentially a collaborative effort between the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, the Alaska Municipal League, the Municipal League of Attorneys, and the stakeholders that were the communities that were governing bodies and members of communities that we listened to testimony from. When the marijuana initiative was passed, we saw communities looking to make legislation and decide whether they wanted to opt in, opt out, but they were looking to the legislature for some guidance in some of the questions that weren't answered in the initiative itself. So we spent time listening to testimony. We listened to testimony from all around Alaska, looking for the common themes that the community leaders were looking for to help them to be able to create whatever rules and regulations that they needed to do. Instead of telling them what to do, we were listening to them and saying, okay, what do you need from the legislature? So HB 75 is a collaboration of all of those stakeholders, and when we brought forth this work product. Here with me today is my aide and the aide to the Community Regional Affairs Committee, Heath Hilliard, and he can go through the sectional if you'd like.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Representative Telton, and committee aide to the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Today you have before you CS HB 75 CRA, its / S version, which was reported out of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee last week. I've provided the committee members with a sectional analysis, and you'll note I've broken the sectional analysis down between non-substantive issues and substantive issues, and so I guess for ease of the committee's consideration, I was just going to walk the committee through the substantive sections. Just to note, the non-substantive, as indicated in my sectional analysis, essentially simply changed references in the initiative from local governments to municipalities, Ledge Legal believing that the reference to municipalities is more proper and consistent with existing statute. So there, I think, are about 9 or 12 sections that are non-substantive. So I will begin by walking through the substantive sections. And I know there may be some questions about some definitional items, and I'm trying to figure out whether or not I should wait for committee members or asking questions, or if I should highlight that, particularly in Section 1. Section 1 of the current bill, the S version, that follows virtually the identical definition that is provided in the initiative language, with the exception of the removal of the reference SALT, which I believe this committee is familiar with, that component of the definition, believing it has no functional meaning. So as we were crafting HB 75 and its various component parts, to the extent practicable and possible, we were aligning definitions and specific provisions that also existed in other marijuana-related legislation being considered by the legislature. I would just point out the key difference between, as you'll note, Section 1, the definition, pertains to a definition in Title 11, the criminal statute, and that is because in the course of drafting HB 75, we did not have the luxury of the presumption of some substantive pieces of legislation making it all the way through the process. And so we wanted to create a structure whereby if HB 75 was the only piece of marijuana-related legislation passed this year, that we would provide the appropriate statutory references. So I know that other pieces completely removed the definition under the Title 11 criminal statute. And the functional effect is the same. We want to provide a standard definition through statute for what marijuana is. So that is exactly why there is a reference to Title 11 in this current version.
So Mr. Hilliard, besides taking out the word assault, did you do something with a comma there too?
Well, Madam Chair, thank you for that question. Interestingly enough, we did not direct the drafters to do or not do anything with a comma. What you're seeing here, in the absence of that confounding comma that this committee's dealt with before, the extra comma is not there, but that actually wasn't at the direction of the committee. It was simply what the drafter provided us. So moving along into page 2 on section 2, substantive in section 2, looking at page 2, lines 16 through 18, you'll notice that is where the committee, at the request of municipalities that we were working with, provided a specific number of plant limits per household. I know that there's been an ongoing question about that municipalities have had, well, what if there are three people? Does that mean there are 18 plants? Well, what if we arrive and one of the members of the household is a slope worker? Can we presume that six of those plants, so on and so forth? So the general ask and the recommendations, again, this bill is largely a work product of municipal attorneys and us just working with them. The general ask was they would like the legislature to provide a bright line on what a total household limit is. Because there is an ordinance, at least I believe, under consideration in the city and county of Denver that proposes a 12-plant limit in residential areas, we chose that. And there is also rationale that I would be happy to explain with regard to kind of a corresponding amount limit based on alcohol. One of the things that has come up in our committee, and I believe this committee has heard, is appropriate limitations on essentially personal possession. And in trying to make a legitimate justification for where 12 plants might come, we looked at the federal law as it pertains to alcohol, and particularly as it pertains to the home brewing of alcohol. It's true the federal government does not put a limitation on the amount of alcohol one can possess in their own home, but federal law does stipulate a limitation on the amount that someone can home brew. And so we thought that there was sort of a corresponding relationship there. So I can get into a long, lengthy rationale about how many ounces of marijuana equals how many gallons of alcohol. There is a reason behind that, and I would be happy to do that if the committee wants to ask, but otherwise I'll leave that alone. Moving.
And I'm just going to interject right here that because I've got some concerns that this might contravene the terms of the initiative, I've asked for an opinion from Legislative Legal, which we have not yet been provided, asking whether or not this contravenes it and whether it contravenes it in such a way which would be inappropriate or unconstitutional or illegal under our laws relating to initiatives. And so we will hopefully have that before we discuss this at the next time that we discuss it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will also point out, I believe we have several municipal attorneys online to testify. And what I've heard is some specifically like 12 as a number, and some simply say they don't care what the number is so long as there is a definitive number per household. So, again, this is a work product designed to be responsive to their needs. And so the Community and Regional Affairs Committee is the sponsor of this bill. If we get suggestion that any number, whether it's 18, 24, 12, is acceptable, then this being their work product, I believe the committee would be satisfied with whatever the Judiciary Committee would like to offer.
So along those lines, I believe that, and we're trying to get copies of them, I believe that one of the progeny of the Raven decision talks about how many plants you can have, but I'm not sure about that at the moment.
And Madam Chair, thank you for bringing that up. Pursuant to our previous discussions, I did a little bit of research today to try to find that. I could not find anything. Clearly, Raven pertains only to the privacy issue. When looking at Noy is informative insofar as they defined 4 ounces or less as personal possession. A quick review did not yield any case law that I could find initially that talked about 12 versus 24. So if your committee staff is able to provide that, that would be very informative for us as well.
Thank you.
Moving along, again, still in Section 2, going down to lines 23 through lines 31, this language, and I believe it also appears somewhere else in other marijuana-related legislation, the municipalities, municipal attorneys asked us to provide greater sideboard and clarity and definition as to what properly constitutes assisting as it pertains to all these other activities where one may assist another in the cultivation and growing of marijuana. And so we have a variety of sideboards, using, displaying, purchasing. Assisting does not include. So it gives a little bit of a sideboard of what assisting is, aiding or supporting, but then it clearly delineates what assisting is not. Moving along.
Yes. Let me interrupt you for one moment. Representative Clayman has joined us here probably about 5 minutes ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Moving along, Section 5, page 3, lines 9 through 17, this simply provides conforming language to Title 4 regarding notification requirements to municipalities when the board is issuing, in the case of Title 4, it would be licenses, in the case of 1738, registrations for commercial operations. Moving along to Section 7, this provides substantially similar language pertaining to a notification and protest process when a municipality may want to protest the issuance of a registration for various commercial marijuana operations. Section 8, this gets a little bit more substantive in terms of the policy call. First of all, it makes the first reference in the bill to marijuana clubs, and again, that is at the request of the municipalities. There has been some debate amongst municipalities about whether or not they would want to have a marijuana club in their within their boundaries, essentially a place outside of the home in which marijuana users could get together and collectively smoke, not necessarily for sale or trade, but simply a place outside of a personal residence to be able to consume marijuana. You have vastly different approaches toward this. For instance, the city of Wasilla has already made an ordinance banning marijuana clubs in anticipation of a definition, whereas the city and borough of Juneau have indicated they may want to consider that as an option to be responsive to cruise ship passengers. So the question was not whether or not we endorse or support or encourage marijuana clubs, simply to provide a definition so that there is a standard definition in state statute that municipalities can refer to when adopting their own ordinances.
So do you have a definition of marijuana club?
Madam Chair, we do. Toward the back of the bill, you will find that on page 11, lines 3 through 5, marijuana club means an entity registered to allow consumption of marijuana by paying members of the club on the registered premises and whose members are 21 years of age or older. And Madam Chair, I do know that there has been some discussion about providing additional sideboards, which again, this committee's input would be very valuable. This was just an initial first blush based on the committee discussion, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Going back to Section 8, we're still on Section 8.
Could a marijuana club be a club where there are actually employees?
Madam Chair, I know that there's been some discussion as it pertains to provisions in Title IV. I know that there's some discussion of bottle clubs versus private clubs. We actually did not weigh in on that issue and come to a conclusion. We simply tried to provide at least a baseline definition. So that would be additional direction and clarification that could be useful. So kind of
where I'm going is many municipalities actually ban the consumption or the smoking of cigarettes, and there's actually a bill going through this building right now, which I don't know what's going to happen to that, which wants to do that on a statewide basis, and it's just sort of ironic that I'm just trying to figure out how the marijuana legislation is going to gel with the anti-smoking legislation.
And Madam Chair, I appreciate that point. I mean, I think that, again, as we were drafting it, trying to draft it with not having the luxury of the presumption of other pieces of legislation passing, there's going to have to be obviously some revisions, some reviser, a reviser's bill maybe to address any potential differences between what passes. We were just operating in the absence of anything else. So if this committee would like to add some additional sideboard to the definition, that is certainly within your purview. Keep going. Also, Section 8, continuing on through Section 8, addresses an unintended omission in the initiative, which with regard to the local option provision, the initiative 1738 made no provision for local option elections for established villages, and I believe the committee is also familiar with that issue. So Section 8 begins the reference to established village, and then as we go through the bill, we put on the sideboards for the process by which an established village can hold a local option election and how the perimeters of an established village are determined.
So is this going to work basically like it works for the local option with respect to alcohol?
Madam Chair, that's correct, obviously, with the exception being that Raven provides protections for personal consumption of marijuana and not for alcohol. So the local option election in this circumstance would pertain only to the banning of commercial activities within the perimeters of an established village. Moving along, Section 9, page 5, lines 26 through page 6, lines 2. One of the things that the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee did at the express request of municipalities was to allow them to establish civil and criminal penalties for time, place, manner violations by commercial marijuana establishments. That was not originally included in the initiative, but in speaking with legislative legal, they said it was not specifically prohibited anywhere in the initiative language, and they believe that also Title 29 provisions would still allow the municipalities to do that, even if we didn't define that expressly. But at the request of the municipalities, we expressly provided that they had criminal penalty authority for time, place, manner violations for commercial establishments. Moving along, also important, Section 16, page 7, lines 13 through 22. What is important here in lines 19 through 22 is we stipulate that any of the powers authorized to the boroughs are on a non-area-wide basis. In essence, what this says is that, for instance, in the case of this Fairbanks North Star Borough, the borough may adopt prohibitions or regulations within the borough boundaries, but because they're non-area-wide, that those any prohibition or ordinance pertaining on the borough-wide level would not apply to the cities within its boundaries. And that was a request of cities, specifically cities like the City of Fairbanks and the City of Wasilla, that are first-class cities within second-class boroughs.
So let me see if I understand that. So then the boroughs, many of which don't have, I think, area-wide powers, they can't adopt right now anti-smoking regulations. That at least that's my understanding. But they would be able to, under your bill, adopt regulations vis-a-vis marijuana establishments.
Madam Chair, that's my understanding as well, that, for instance, the Fairbanks North Star Borough could adopt borough ordinances pertaining to borough land outside of the boundaries of the cities, the first-class cities like North Pole and Fairbanks, which lie within the boundaries of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. So,
even if one of their powers is not, I think it's health or public safety, many boroughs don't have that power.
That's correct, Madam Chair, but my understanding is they still have zoning and planning authority, and that could fall under that circumstance. So the policy call of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee was there to say, with regard to stipulating non-area-wide, is that a borough could not supersede a city within its boundaries. That was the intent.
All right. Thank you.
Moving along, Section 17.
Representative Bloomberg has now joined us.
Section 17, page 7, lines 23 through page 10, line 9. This sets forth the proper process by which an established village can have a local option election to prohibit commercial marijuana operations within its boundaries. And this is virtually identical language to Title IV. We simply instructed the drafter to take Title IV language with regard to local option elections and mirror it as closely as possible for the purposes of commercial marijuana establishments. Moving along, Section 19, page 10, lines 14 through 17, as I've read earlier, adds the definition of marijuana club to marijuana establishment. Section 20 revises the definition of marijuana to be consistent with Section 1 of the bill. Essentially, the practical effect is we want to have a singular definition of marijuana throughout statute so that there is no confusion for municipalities as they adopt ordinances. Section 21, page 10, line 27 through page 11, line 5, gives the express definition for established village, marijuana club, and public place as recommended by the municipalities. It also provides a definition of residence as necessitated by the plant limit found in Section 2. Of note, the public place definition, and I believe that this committee is familiar with that, follows AS 1181-900. Lastly, Section 22 removes local government from the definition section found in 1738, and let me just refresh myself as to why that was the case. That's kind of a conforming amendment, and I don't remember exactly why local government was removed, but there was a drafting reason. And then lastly, Section 23 provides for the effective date of the bill.
So if public place doesn't include a marijuana club, then under what auspices would the local government ban the marijuana club?
Madam Chair, that would be a determination as a commercial marijuana establishment. Because the initiative provides that there are various types of commercial marijuana establishments with regard to the cultivator, the transporter, the wholesaler, the retailer. This adds marijuana club to the list of commercial establishments.
Commercial marijuana. So if somebody were to form a marijuana club, kind of like a book club or something, or maybe a nonprofit, how would that work?
Madam Chair, I don't have a response to that. But again, perhaps our definition of marijuana club is not quite as sufficient as necessary. Again, it was a first blush based on the requests of municipalities to give them some definition so that they could determine by local ordinance whether they will allow or disallow marijuana clubs within their boundaries.
Thank you. I've got one other question, and then I don't want to hog things. Page 2. Lines 3 and 4. Does that differ from current law? Where it says, or the weight of any other ingredient combined with?
Madam Chair, I believe that what this does, again, because This is referring to AS 1100, the criminal statute, that they needed to include that language to conform to the initiative language. So you've got to look at this as, well, this is what how we have to change the definition in AS 1100 in the event that a substantive criminal regulatory bill package is not adopted by this legislature.
Okay, thank you.
So, any questions for Representative Keller?
I've got a few, but one of them is kind of along the lines of the question you just asked. I want to throw it in here. I'm sorry, I lost my thumb, slipped out. Back in the back of the section about where the board does not have enforcement or any kind of jurisdiction. Oh, here it is. That's on section 14, page 7, lines 5 through 9. Just if you would explain what's going on there. I think it reads that registration shall not be or is not subject to regulation or enforcement by the board during the term of that registration.
Where is this again?
What page? 7.
Lines.
Lines 5 through 9.
5 through 9.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, the only reason Section 14 is included is because we amended the existing statute under the initiative language to change local government to municipality. So what you're seeing here, Section 14, is actually in the initiative itself. We only amended changed the reference from local government to municipality. So I couldn't speak to essentially why that's there. That is essentially language from the initiative.
Well. From the initiative. So the initiative is making the deletion. And because the deletion on line 8, where it shows those two deletions and the insertions, you're saying that's directly from the initiative itself, the way it is.
Through the chair, Representative Keller. Okay, so looking at section 14, you'll see the deletion of local government inclusion of municipality. That is clarifying and using the standard.
I got that.
Going forward, and you're looking at the holder of the registration is not subject. That's a grammatical change based on legal. There was no policy direction by the committee or any members of the municipal attorneys who are working with us. That was drafting language.
Okay. I will read it 6 times at my leisure and see if I can figure out what's going on. It is not clear to me at this time. But.
Well, as I understand it, the way the initiative works is that if the board does not act on an application for a registration, then the municipality can act. And so I think that what this is simply doing is changing that from local government act to the municipality can act. At least that's the way I'm reading it.
Madam Chair and Representative Keller, the initiative language would read, the holder of such registration shall not be subject to regulation or enforcement by the board during the term of that registration. The new revision says the holder of the registration is not subject to a regulation or enforcement by the board during the term of that registration. We could certainly ask the drafter, Ms. Martin, but it was essentially a grammatical thing by Ledge Legal. Again, there was no policy direction by the Community Regional Affairs Committee or any request by a municipality for that language change. It was purely drafting.
Okay. It's on the record. We'll look at it some more. I've got a few more if you want me to proceed.
Go right ahead.
Okay. How about the notwithstanding language on page 2? We took it out of 79, did we not? Page 2, lines 6 and 7?
Well.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the work drafts took it out. It's still being considered.
Okay. Well, it's highlighted. That's fine. And then, so a policy decision for us, just to clarify, page 3, line 13, about half the registration application fee going to the municipality. That's a policy consideration that is before us, right?
And where is that?
That is on page 3, line 13.
Madam Chair, and I believe we do have some municipal representatives online that would like to testify under public comment or public testimony. I would guess that with regard, I know there's been some debate about whether or not there would be essentially revenue sharing for these licensures or registrations. Based on my conversations with municipal attorneys, of course, the municipalities would like to make sure that there's essentially that 50-50 split for registration fees, but you have people, I believe, online that could speak to that better than I could.
And isn't there something in our packets which is suggesting that that is not appropriate legally? I thought there was a legal opinion on that.
Madam Chair, if there is something to that effect included in the legal opinions I provided you, I'm not familiar with it because we were looking at different components in House Community and Regional Affairs. This is not an issue that ever came up in the course of that committee's discussion. So, in short, I can't provide you any direction or...
I'm referring to the legal opinion of February 27, 2015... And on page 3, it talks of dedication of funds without appropriation.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have a memo from February 27, but it only has 2 pages. Is there a second one I should?
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have another one, too. Yeah. Sorry.
Chair, Representative Grimberg, there are 2 different legal memorandums from February 27th.
Yeah, that's why I'm not on finance. I can't go to 3. Go ahead, Heath.
So do you see what I'm talking about, Mr. Hilliard?
Madam Chair, I do. I have no response. I see it, and I don't have an opinion or any way to guide this committee.
All right. Well, it's something that has been noted, and we are not going to be moving this bill out today, so we can consider it further the next time that we're here. Yeah. Representative Keller.
Just one more for now because it's on that topic, but if this requires the board to notify the municipality, when they receive an application, is there a fiscal note, is my question. Yeah, I haven't seen a fiscal note, but there's a requirement for action. You would think that there would be an impact there.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, there is a singular fiscal note from Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development under the Division of Alcohol Beverage Control. That is a 0 fiscal note. Again, that language and that provision you're talking to is essentially taken directly from Title IV, and we wanted to apply as many of those provisions with regard to notification and or protests that exist for alcohol licensures to municipalities to commercial marijuana. So that really is just, an inclusion based on Title IV. We're trying to conform as much as possible for administrative acts to Title IV as our guidance.
Thanks.
Representative Grimberg, did you have your hand up?
I was waving to Tom to get a book.
Okay. Well, hearing no further questions right at this moment, why don't we open it up for public testimony and then we can go back for further questions. So, I've got a number of people online. We will begin with Todd Sherwood in Anchorage. Yeah. Mr. Sherwood, you're here for questioning rather than for testimony. All right. Scott Bloom, the City of Kenai.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House Judiciary Committee. My name is Scott Bloom, and I'm the City Attorney for the City of Kenai. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Representative Tilton and Mr. Hilliard have worked closely with many local municipal representatives to hear our concerns regarding the implementation of the marijuana initiative. And I believe that the current CS for House Bill 75 before you today fairly represents these efforts. Options for local control and clarity and enforceable rules will benefit the City of Kenai and I believe other municipalities as well. The bill before you today preserves local options and provides clarity for the public and agencies charged with enforcement. I support a bright line rule for a particular number of plants per household, as I believe this provides clarity to all potential interested parties. While I understand some municipalities in Colorado have implemented a 12 household limit, I don't advocate for any particular limit as long as there is a specific number. Without the amendments in this regard, I believe the initiative language will either result in scant enforcement or constant litigation. Your support for this bill will help to provide guidance and uniformity as municipalities move forward in this process. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Bloom?
Madam Chair.
Go right ahead.
As these people progress, I don't want to ask questions at this point, but I may have questions as we go along, and I'd request that Mr. Bloom and others remain around.
Can you remain available so that if anybody has any questions after there's been other testimony, Mr. Bloom?
Yes, I can. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Although I actually have one question for you right now. Why would it be difficult for a municipality if, for example, there are four people in a household and there are 24 plants? Why isn't that as bright of a line as saying 12 plants or 18 plants or 36 plants? I mean, if there are four people, it would just sort of seem that to me that it would be relatively easy to figure out how many plants four people are entitled to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the difficulty is in determining how many people actually live at that residence. So say our police respond to a domestic violence call, they show up at the house and they see 36 plants, and the two people there say, oh yeah, six adults live here. I think that's problematic. I also think that when you have large quantities of marijuana, say in a college-type setting where you have numerous adults living together, it leads to other problems when you start having significant amounts of marijuana in one place.
That's a little bit different, though, than a bright line, just for purposes of making things easier to figure out.
It is a little bit different. And, you know, if we know that you can only have 12 plants or 18 plants or 24 plants, and our police show up at a residence for whatever reason, and there's a given number of plants that are within the limit, that'll be the end of our inquiry. Otherwise, I think it's going to be a much more complicated process to determine who lives there and who possesses the plants.
Thank you.
Representative
Kronberg.
Thank you. And I assume, folks, that we're really looking at page 2, lines 16 through 18. Is that what we're focusing on here with this, Mr. Bloom? Do you have a copy of the CNRA version?
Yeah, I do. Lines 16 through 18 on page 2. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, if I may continue.
Go ahead.
Let's say you have a fourplex in a backyard, and you got some, and maybe you can't grow marijuana in Alaska in a backyard, a greenhouse, something out there. How would you, as enforcers, know to which residents those plants belong?
I don't know that we could. I guess our police department would have to ask and inquire further in that regard.
The reason I'm asking, I don't necessarily...
Chair, Representative Gunther.
Thank you. The reason I'm asking is because we've got a memo, February 27, from Emily Nauman. It's a three-page memo, and it talks about equal protection on the first page. Have you had a chance to see that, sir?
I don't know that I have seen that particular memo, Representative Gruenberg. However, I have looked into some case law in a limited fashion, and I see it, you know, analyzed under Alaska law more as a privacy type interest. And I will say that our Supreme Court has, you know, when we look at this, we look at whether the regulation has a close and substantial relationship to a legitimate government interest, and that public health and welfare, and our court has previously decided that the state has a substantial interest in regulating the use of marijuana in driving, use by children, in regulating it in public places, and in regulating and the buying and selling of marijuana. And I think that when you start having a whole lot of marijuana in one place, you you trigger that interest in the buying and selling of marijuana.
I think
there's an interest in reasonable enforcement of regulations. And I think without more clarity on this subject, it's going to be very difficult for there to be any enforcement, because I think it's too vague when you show up at a house to determine whose pot plants are whose.
May I continue, please?
Yes, but I think I'd like to tell the committee that Todd Sherwood, who is the municipal attorney for Anchorage, as well as Bruce Schulte for the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation, they are both online also to answer questions.
Madam Chair, maybe do you at some point want to bring them up together or something? My questions are going to relate to the practical problems of enforcing this law and how the constitutional issues are likely to either have to be further defined, or we have to do something in the law, or I want to know how the police and the prosecutors are going to really do this. And I don't need to necessarily focus on Mr. Bloom, but I'd pose that to a panel or anybody who's up.
Well, actually, we have three people who are listed to testify. There is Scott Bloom, whose testimony that we have heard. There's Luke Hopkins, who is the mayor of Fairbanks. Then we've got Todd Sherwood, who's the municipal attorney for Anchorage, and Bruce Schulte, Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation, both available to answer questions. And then Kathy Wasserman here in the audience from the AML to testify. So I have no problems with if any one of those folks who is listed as either to testify or to answer questions would like to take a shot at answering Representative Grunberg's questions or anybody else's questions.
Madam Chair, I take it we don't have any police or anything, but if we do, I'd appreciate it if they would stand up as well. And if not, I'd like to have, I think, the municipal attorneys. I don't know if the mayor wants to be involved in this issue, but I'd welcome advice from anybody. And it's just a general question, ma'am.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg, if you'll look at the initiative, under Section 1738.030(1)(a)(1) of the initiative, it talks about marijuana plants shall be cultivated in a location where the plants are not subject to public view without the use of binoculars, aircraft, or other optical aids. So that might answer your question with respect to the greenhouse in the back.
Well, I'll change it to a basement, a common basement.
Okay.
Whatever. I don't want to get hung up on that. Do you have a copy of the initiative? And if Madam Chair, if you could get anybody who wants to be on the firing line.
Well, Representative Grunberg, I have announced for those people that they are welcome to answer your question or anyone else's question. So far, there's been nobody else who has come on the line saying they want to answer your question, Representative Grunberg. So if you have a specific hello?
Hello, this is Mayor Luke Hopkins, Fairbanks, Snowstar Borough.
Yes. Do you have testimony, or would you like to try to answer Representative Grunberg's questions, or both?
Chair, Chairwoman, if they could be restated, the borough attorney is expected to be sitting here with me. We have participated in that, so I would like to hear the question stated again. There's been a lot of conversation with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg, would you like to restate your question?
Sure. And I would also ask that Mr. Sherwood come up, too, so that he's on the firing line, too. My question is, from any of you, how is this going to be enforced in a situation where they're being grown in an area, in a residence, a multifamily residence that's accessible to a number of people, and it could be a greenhouse that maybe is opaque, you can't see what's inside, could be in a basement, could be in a hallway, whatever. How is it going to be done? Any problems? Legally.
Well, Mr. Sherwood, you're on the line already, and you are an attorney.
Yes, I am, Madam Chair.
Want to identify yourself for the record and see if you can answer Representative Grunberg's question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Todd Sherwood. I'm an assistant municipal attorney with the Department of Law in Anchorage. My apologies, I accidentally hung up earlier just as you were introducing me. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, as an important aside on the equal protection issue, I did want to mention that yesterday I spoke with an attorney in the city of Denver's law department on this very issue, because Colorado's state initiative, which is part of their constitution, unlike ours, has the identical language regarding the six-plant limit. The city of Denver went ahead prior to legalization January 1st, 2014, and established a 12-plant per dwelling unit limit. They have had no equal protection challenges of any kind. In fact, apparently there's been no challenges of any kind on the 12-plant limit, which in some ways may speak to whether it would be a credible challenge. Now, granted, on the one hand, I don't know that they have the same privacy clause in their constitution that we do. On the other hand, their amendment that legalized recreational marijuana is part of their constitution. So in that sense, it may be roughly equivalent. But to answer your question directly, Representative Grunberg, and then I might come back if there's time to talk a little more about the equal protection issue. I think, one, your question illustrates the importance of having a bright line rule here, because that way, no matter whether it's in a basement or in the backyard, then those plants, let's say those 12 plants, are in essence owned in common, and however many adults are there are arguably in possession of those plants. One thing I would note is that the suggested language here uses the term single residence in our code, and I discussed this with our Deputy Director of Planning. We don't use the term single residence. We talk about dwelling or dwelling unit as being a separate residence for one household, and then we further define household. But it may well be that municipalities would, in order to address the issue you've raised, need to further define what the 12-plant limit applies to in terms of a greenhouse. I think as long as it's inside the building, we're okay with our definitions. But for us, that probably underlines the need, as we've said before, to leave maximum flexibility to the municipalities as we go forward in this area.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hilliard and Mr. Brown, in their usual Johnny-on-the-spot fashion, have pointed to me the answer to my question. It's in existing law. And it's in AS 11.81.900, sub 53. May I read it, please?
Yes.
Public place means a place to which the public or a substantial group of persons has access and includes highways, transportation facilities, schools, places of amusement or business, parks, playgrounds, prisons, and hallways, comma, lobbies, comma, and other portions of apartment houses and hotels, not constituting rooms or apartments for actual residence. So I think that's getting us closer to where we want to be, and I'm assuming, for the purpose of discussion, that that definition would apply to this bill, which is entitled 17. You're nodding. It does. Okay, that was the chair nodding, not sleeping, but nodding. Affirmative. And I would just simply say that I would like our lawyers and the municipal lawyers to look carefully, because it may be that some sharp lawyer will say, well, this isn't, quote, an apartment house or hotel. It's a fourplex or a duplex even, which might not constitute an apartment house. So we'd want to be sure that this is accurate, and I just flag it for them. And I would hope that maybe staff can make sure these memos go out to these folks, the ones from our alleged legal, because Emily Nauman is raising some issues here, and I don't know whether they're right or not. Thank you very much, Mr. Sherwood, Mr. Bloom.
Is there anyone else who would like to ask Mr. Sherwood or Mr. Bloom any questions? And Mr. Hopkins is the Fairbanks attorney on the line now.
Yes, Madam Chair. Renee Broker, the borough attorney for Fairbanks Lifestyle Borough, is here, and we've been following the conversation. The issue of dwelling unit is probably the point that she'd like to speak to at this time.
All right. Well, why don't you identify yourself for the record, then?
Hi, my name is Renee Broker. I'm the borough attorney for the Fairbanks Lifestyle Borough.
You're not coming in really clearly.
Hi, I'm Renee Broker. I'm the borough attorney for the Fairbanks Lifestyle Borough. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now. Thank you.
I just was wanting to add that I agree with the observation that our municipality also uses the term dwelling unit.
Thank you.
That may be better.
Representative Grunberg?
Just thinking about it, that may be better. It's not as narrow as the one I just read.
Thank you. What was that?
Didn't do it.
That was Heath up there.
Thought there was somebody outside the other room honking their horn.
All right. So now we have, for continuing on with public testimony, Luke Hopkins.
Yes, thank you very much. My name is Luke Hopkins. I'm the mayor of the Fairbanks West Borough. One of the pieces that I would speak to, of course, I understand that on this particular, in the committee substitute on page 2, lines 16 through 19, that has to do with the number of marijuana plants. I've been testifying regularly that 6 plants per dwelling unit is what I'm hoping for. As I understand, the ability to harvest the 3 adult fully flowering plants and what that produces for a household, and if you figure that you might have adult children of a parent, then you have all these children in the house. Do we need more than 6 plants in a dwelling unit to satisfy the personal use of the adults over 21? And it just, when we start talking 12 or 18 plants, and I know the current number is 12, I don't see, and I get input from parents in my community that, why do we need more than 6 when that should be enough to suffice recreation or personal use? So I understand that there's a slogan out there that's regulate marijuana like alcohol, and we can have X amount, but we're talking. One is a, you know, this substance of marijuana is, in my mind, different than alcohol, and I would ask that the committee consider that. I do have another point that I do want to raise, and that's I've had discussions with Representative Tilton's office concerning, I would ask that there be consideration as for language that a second-class borough may exercise by ordinance on a non-area-wide or area-wide basis the power to regulate, prohibit, and provide for civil penalties for a public for the public use of marijuana.
Well, this was yesterday.
That's the language I believe has been sent earlier to Representative Tilton's staff member, who's been very helpful, and that would be Mr. Heath Hilliard. My point, why that language? Because second-class boroughs have to adopt to different degrees, as they have across the state, health and social service powers and exercising those powers. And it would be best, it'd be best for this borough, and I think other second-class boroughs, that the law allows by ordinance, as I stated, for the ability to do civil fines for public use of marijuana. I was hoping to have a $100 fine for the consumption in public of marijuana, and I had to pull that back because currently in our borough it doesn't fit. I don't have that power. We don't have that power. So if it's by law, we can bring it before our assembly and have it by ordinance adopted. But if we have it, for example, under Title 29 or in AS 17.38, that would be most beneficial, I think, to local municipalities, give them the ability to do as the local legislative body finds appropriate for our community. I think other than that, I appreciate the work that is being done on this bill to try to define local, you know, to give as much local option to municipalities on both an area-wide and non-area-wide basis is very good work. I do know that earlier I testified to the other committee that the aspect of if a area-wide, if a borough that has incorporated cities has a more restrictive code on marijuana, that be considered on an area-wide basis so that we don't have to put spray paint lines in the snow where the city limits are and where the borough limits are. If they're less restrictive, then the cities would be more restrictive and they can have those rules and understand that. And that seems like a way that we can maneuver around this. That if a area-wide code has a more restrictive nature to it, that would prevail over the cities. We can work with cities on that here in our borough, and I imagine that there'd be other comments on that. That concludes my testimony on this. I'd be glad to answer any questions. Thank you for this opportunity.
Does anybody have any questions for Mayor Hopkins?
I do apologize. I was late, and if I'm going over something that was already covered, I apologize. I've had many of the same questions in my mind as I thought about this particular bill, which was about to come to judiciary, and I was looking forward to it. This is complicated, and I would hope, number one, that the municipalities would be of a like mind, and number two, if they want some other language, if they could get us some language so we could see what they're talking about here.
And I believe, Representative Grunberg, that the sponsor does have some other language, and we're not moving this bill today, and we'll be working with that.
Thank you. Good.
Any other questions for Mayor Hopkins? So I actually have a question. So the way the bill is worded now, without any new language, the boroughs don't have area-wide powers to enforce health and social service laws. Is that correct?
Representative Ledoux, this is Mayor Hopkins, and the borough attorney may be able to weigh in a little bit refined over what I say. It depends. It depends on the powers that have been given to second-class boroughs. If I may allow Renee Broker to be on the record to answer this question.
Certainly. Go ahead. I'd like to hear her.
Yes. Homeless boroughs would have that power, but second-class boroughs do not, unless they've separately acquired it through a voter approval. Our borough does not currently possess that power because it has not been provided to us by state law or by voter approval.
Do you know which boroughs have that authority and which don't?
I wouldn't want to speak completely authoritatively, but I don't currently believe that any second-class boroughs have that authority.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
This is off the subject a bit, but I have long been curious whether the legislature in general should be looking at whether any of our laws need to be changed to provide some flexibility or something more to deal with these kinds of issues. This just happens to be coming up in this bill, and I'm not suggesting we go away from it, but since we have a lot of municipal folks on the line here, maybe at some point they can take that up.
We're talking about this bill right now.
No, I understand.
You want to introduce some other bill some other time to take care of some of those other...
I'm just raising the issue.
Thank you.
That's all.
So if I have no further questions for Mayor Hopkins, the next person who's listed as wanting to testify is Kathy Wasserman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For the record, Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. I'm sorry to try to get in early. I'm on the marijuana circuit today, and I have to be upstairs to testify on Senate Bill 30. So anyway, first of all,
the marijuana. Can we define that?
I was speaking to Heath and Representative Tilton earlier today. I never thought, I take marijuana daily now, the newspaper. I never thought that I would be so wrapped up in marijuana. So, and I take a marijuana magazine at home, and the postmaster winked at me the other day, so I don't know if this puts me in a whole new... Anyway, my age, it was just great, but I think it was because of the marijuana magazine. First of all, I would like to talk a little bit about the process, since obviously I don't represent a specific municipality. I did appreciate what Representative Grunberg said about getting municipalities on the same page. I thought there are 164 of them. I don't know if we've ever been on the same page, but we do try, and that's what the Alaska Municipal League's purpose is, to try to help that along. I want to say that this process that we went through was really impressive. This is one of the first times in my work with local government that I've actually seen a bill come up that affected municipalities, and there are many, where municipalities were the main thrust of the testimony and the questioning. There are so many decisions, as you well know, made about municipalities, and sometimes we're allowed to comment and sometimes we're paid attention to and other times not. But this was truly a listening session by the committee as to what municipalities needed to make sure that their residents are safe, that the law is that we abide by the law as passed by the residents, by the people of Alaska. And it was a truly good process. There were some disagreements between communities. There are some disagreements, for instance, about the area-wide, non-area-wide. That certainly I don't take a position on that. The municipalities can deal with that fight it out as to how that might work, or work with their municipalities in their boroughs, but there are differing views on that with the different municipalities. So I want to say the process was great. what we appreciate more than anything and what we like about 75, even though there are parts that everyone had maybe small disagreements with, is this gives us the local option to take care of these issues on the local level, because we will feel the ramifications first, no matter whether there are things that happen that are good or bad. Municipalities will be the first responders, so to speak, and we need to be able to be flexible. We also would hope that the legislature and municipalities together take a look at this whole issue in a year, 2 years, because I am confident there are going to be things that don't work well, and we all think, wow, we thought that wasn't going to happen. But, I mean, I think a lot of us are going into this not really knowing how it's going to turn out, and I think we all need to be able to work together and be flexible through this whole process. So with that, the Alaska Municipal League is in favor of House Bill 75. We've had many of our mayors and council and assembly members testify and give input, and it's been a wonderful process. So this is a kind of a win-win situation for the legislature and the municipalities, as I see. Thank you.
So do I take it that this 12-plant limit is somehow or other a compromise that everybody has more or less in the municipalities agreed on?
Madam Chairman, I think it may, basically the 12 is kind of a placeholder. I don't think anyone's totally married to 12. It's just that a limit helps keep things from being so gray when police do respond, to have to figure out who lives there, are they on the slope, are they in the military somewhere and they're gone for three, are they in the National Guard and they're gone for a month, do you have to wait till they get home to... I mean, there are too many questions and too many ifs, ands, or buts, and it becomes, you know, the more regulation we put into this sometimes brings more enforcement and more questions. And so we're trying to, I think the limit, on the other hand, is a stipulation that will keep it more clean cut and allow our law enforcement to be a little more positive about what they're responding to. And one more thing I might say is I know you had the opinion on the tax, but I guess I looked at this registration tax that's mentioned and that was mentioned in the three-page letter. It could, we certainly already have a plan or a tax that works that way, which is the raw fish tax, which the legislature, as you well know, Madam Chairman, being very familiar with raw fish tax, that the legislature shares with municipalities. How specifically that was done through the legislature, I'm not sure, but I'm sure this could be done the same way.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Wasserman? Representative Klayman.
Well, the discussion about the 12 plan, it seems like there's been a tension that there is some tension between what I think our chair has noted about what do you do with the constitutional protections from Raven for plants in a residence, and trying to articulate some law enforcement needs, which I think is what the 12 plan is trying to address. And I guess at some level, I noted when we had last Friday the junior police detective who was here, who was there to show us samples of marijuana, but turns out his expertise was really in much more harder drugs, heroin and other substances. And it strikes me that although there's concern with the 12 plant limit, as I listen to this, I ponder whether where we may be more is that, frankly, municipalities probably aren't going to be doing much with plants at home, whether it's 12 plants or 30 plants, because it's so confusing and so hard to figure out where Raven fits, and that they'll find the plants because they're there for something else. And we'll get into issues of lots of plants when they have 200 plants and they don't have a license. But I'm not sure that's a question that calls for a response, but it's just an observation.
Any further questions for Ms. Wasserman? Well, then, thank you very much. Bruce Schulte is also, I think, on the line, and so I guess I want to ask Bruce. Bruce, are you on the line?
Yes, Madam Chair, good afternoon. Bruce Schulte here with the Coalition for Responsible Cannabis Legislation.
So Bruce, how do you square the 12 plant limit with the specific wording of the initiative? And does your organization have any position?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you for that question. I've actually given this a great deal of thought recently and also during today's testimony. And it occurs to me that many of the numbers that have been thrown out are somewhat subjective in nature. I mean, they are based on precedent outside of the state, but not so much within the state. And I appreciate the challenge here. I mean, I think we all want to see law enforcement and Alaskan citizens alike have some clear guidance on this. So in pondering this question myself, I was trying to find the most substantive arguments I could for a number of plants. The ballot initiative itself, of course, says that, you know, adults 21 and over can have up to 6 plants. Then the question, of course, as we all have heard, is what do you do if there's multiple adults in the home? In considering this, I have to look at, you know, the legal precedent, which was Raven, and I'll confess, I've looked at that ruling, and I cannot find the specific reference to 24 plants, although it's in there somewhere. I don't know if it's Raven versus State of Alaska or a subsequent ruling, but that number is in there, and it's worth noting, I think, that the Raven decision was a forced issue. Mr. Raven actually went out of his way to get arrested just to bring this issue to court. Now, I'm not suggesting that anybody's going to do that, but I think if we're looking for a waterline or a benchmark, that 24 plant number is a compelling number. So on the basis of that argument, now I've included some written notes, so perhaps those have been distributed to the committee members. I'll read them for you, but when I look at this, I would submit that a total of 24 plants in a single household is probably the most defensible number, just based on, you know, prior legal precedent and, you know, every other rational argument that I can think of. Now, that said, I think that it sort of points to another opportunity, which is this home grower license that has been referenced in another bill. I would be the first, you know, to say, you know, we need to make a distinction between personal cultivation and possession and commercial. However, it is a fact that some of the existing commercial market is being supplied by smaller home growers. And so the challenge, as I see it, for the industry and for the legislature is how do we encourage those folks to participate in a regulated taxed marijuana industry? And I think that we're kind of treading on that right now with this very question. You know, if somebody has more than 6 plants in their home, I would contend it should be only 6 plants per adult living at that home. But if somebody is going to go over that limit, we should make it as easy as possible for them to simply get a home grower license so that they can participate legitimately in a regulated marijuana industry. I don't think we're going to avoid confusion entirely. But I do think that this 24 plant limit is a defensible one. It would stand up in court if some enterprising lawyer took it upon himself to force the issue. I think it would be defensible based on prior rulings. And again, as I said, it opens up or suggests an opportunity to encourage folks to, you know, to participate in the commercial industry if that is in fact their intent.
Well, and of course, the homegrown license can be considered when the ABC or the Marijuana Control Board, I mean, that's one of those things that can be, forgive the pun, hashed out in those in those organizations. But it seems to me that there's two issues here. There's the Raven right to privacy issue, but that's actually kind of a different issue than the terms of the initiative. So I guess I was asking you how you thought that this gelled with the terms of the initiative.
Madam Chair, thank you, and I apologize. I was kind of running around the tree on my previous response. I would offer this. The initiative clearly stipulates that an individual can grow up to 6 plants in their home. Where we have 2 or more adults is the gray area. And I would submit that that gray area exists all the way up to the number of 24 plants. And so recognizing that that gray area exists, I would suggest that the only rational way to address this is to simply say, okay, you know, for a single adult, it's 6 plants. For multiple adults sharing a single residence, it'll be 24. It's not a clear, bright line, and I appreciate that, you know, law enforcement will probably look at that and go, well, you know, somebody could live on the slope, somebody could be visiting from out of state, we don't know. I get that, and I don't have a good answer for that. But I do think that it's the most rational, defensible number based on the information we have.
Thank you. Representative Klayman.
On that same topic, I'm just, because I was looking through the initiative, and the initiative doesn't say anything about 24 plants or anything other than the 6 plants. How do you get from 12 plants is irrational, 24 plants is rational? I mean, aren't you sort of, at some level, isn't it kind of arbitrary whether you're picking 12 plants or 24 or 60 plants? I mean, there's certainly households that we all can find around the community that have a lot more than 2 adults in them, and some have 4 and some have 6. And I mean, at some level, isn't picking 24 just as arbitrary as picking 12?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I understand your argument. I would say that it's only slightly less arbitrary, and based simply on the fact that there is a preceding legal opinion that stipulates that anything under 25 plants is considered a protected activity under the individual's right to privacy. So that's the only argument I can make. I will grant you that the difference between 12 and 24, based on my argument, is a slim one, but being half German, I grasp at any semblance of logic I can find. I wonder, Madam Chair, I wonder when we finish this question, I wonder if I might just briefly address some of my other comments that I submitted earlier.
Yes, you can. So I have no further follow-up on this question. I understand that Mr. Hilliard would like to come back up here to try to address this, and then we'll go back to you, Bruce, for some more testimony or questioning.
Okay, thank you. I'll stand by.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Heath Hilliard, staff to Representative Tilton, the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. Just to inform and guide this committee's deliberations, I would like to give you some rationale as to where we came from the 12 plants. It goes beyond simply that the city and borough of Denver are adopting a similar regulation. As I think I alluded to before, and I know I've briefed a number of the members of this committee, their staff, that, for instance, again, the federal government...
Excuse me, Mr. Hilliard, I'm reading this article, and it's talking about a 36-plant limit for the city of Denver.
And Madam Chair, that's new in response to grow operations in non-residential areas. So they're trying to put a different restriction for grow operations that could be considered personal grow in non-residential areas. There's previously, my understanding, an ordinance before the city and county of Denver. I don't know if it's been adopted or it's still under consideration. That would be a limit of 12 per household in a residential area. But I believe if Mr. Sherwood is still on, again, he spoke with the city attorney for Denver, and maybe he could provide some additional guidance there. But I wanted to go beyond and explain in terms of in terms of working with the municipalities and trying to come up with any bright line number, one of the things that we identified was that the federal government currently provides a limitation on the amount of homebrew a person can brew in their own home for personal consumption for alcohol, for beer. And those limitations currently are 100 gallons per person or not more than 200 gallons per household. Similarly, wanting to, again, regulate marijuana like alcohol, the thought of the committee was, well, if there's a standard for the amount of homebrew, there certainly should be, if that's the rationale, a limitation on the amount that could be personally cultivated for personal consumption. Not that there's a limitation on the amount someone can possess in their home, simply the amount that someone can actually cultivate. And so in looking through that, we did some investigation, and one of the questions was, how much is an ounce of pot? And I know this committee has actually seen an ounce of pot and a pound of pot last Friday, but to kind of, in terms of consumption, how much is an ounce of pot? Well, there's actually, I believe, a document in your packet that I provided that talks about how much usable marijuana is in an ounce. And the author responds that there are roughly 60 joints worth, assuming that a joint is roughly a half a gram of marijuana. There are 60 joints within an ounce of marijuana. And he characterizes it in his response to a reader as, it's a keg of pot. And we're talking about, there's roughly 60 12-ounce beers in a pony keg of beer. And so using that as a conversion, the committee came up with a conversion of, well, an ounce of pot is equal to roughly 5.35 gallons of beer. So when you do the math, we also provided, and I believe it's also in your committee packets, there is some information that talks about exactly how much marijuana could six plants yield, or what, it's one plant, then you'd have to multiply it by six. The long and the short of it is, depending upon the adeptness of a particular home cultivator, the amount of usable marijuana could vary wildly. And on the low end, we anticipated that six plants for one person, on the low end, in a year, could produce about 1.5 pounds of marijuana, or 18 ounces. On the high end, based on the information we had, we believe six plants in the hands of a very adept cultivator could generate as much as 13.5 pounds of usable marijuana in a given year. Now, since putting that on the record, we've heard from people back and forth who've said, you way overestimated the amount that can be grown, and I've had other people say you've way underestimated the amount that you can grow. The long and the short of it is, we think, assuming 1.5 to 13.5 pounds per year for six plants is a reasonable guesstimation of the amount that could be yielded. Now, again, if we assume that 1 ounce is equal to 5.35 gallons of beer, on the low end, 18 ounces equates to equitable to about 101 gallons. On the high end, at 13.5, that would equate to 1,200 gallons a year. So again, the initiative, at least the campaign to promote the initiative, was the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol. So in adopting the 12-plant limit, again, trying to find a bright line and finding some standard, that was the rationale behind it, to say, well, we are trying to regulate marijuana like alcohol, and that was where the committee came to. And that whole discussion about the amounts and yields and whatever is actually on the record from the previous committee hearing. So I just thought that would be informative for this committee.
Thank you. So, Mr. Schumpfe, are you still on the line?
Madam Chair, yes, I am here.
Yes, and I think you wanted to address a couple of other points.
Sure, if I may, briefly, again, these are in my written comments. I won't read them verbatim. The first one is fairly straightforward. There's a section of the proposed bill, Section 12, 1738.110, paragraph M. It states that a municipality that has not prohibited various marijuana businesses.
What page are you on, Mr. Schumpfe?
I'm sorry. I apologize. I may have been referencing in my notes an older version of the bill. So let me just go down here and see if, in fact, oh my gosh, I hope you didn't take this out. Paragraph 1738.110. I apologize. I'm looking at it on basis right now.
Section 12, 1738.110M.
That's page 6, line 19.
Okay, yeah, it's page
6, line 19.
Oh, I apologize. It looks like the change that I was suggesting has in fact been made in this draft. Never mind.
Okay.
Okay, I apologize for that. I was working from a I hope I don't do that again. So I'll go to the last page of my comments, because I think this remains pertinent. There was even some discussion today about the whole nature of public place and public consumption and so forth. And this has come up in conversation with Anchorage, with Fairbanks, with Westella. And I don't dispute for a moment that public consumption of marijuana is in fact unlawful. private consumption is lawful. The gray area that I think we're running up against is that there will be whether they're commercial businesses or otherwise, where marijuana might lawfully be consumed on the premises of mainly of the private business land. And that the discussion today has focused on marijuana clubs, but there could be other examples. For example, there could be a trade show or what's known in the industry as a cannabis cup. It's most analogous to the beer and barley wine festival that they have in Anchorage once a year. Those types of events could conceivably allow consumption on the premises, perhaps in a designated area, sort of the equivalent of a beer garden. And I would point out that in Title IV alcohol regulations, there are 22 different license types articulated there. Some of them are very, very temporary. Some of them are seasonal. Some of them are, you know, annual. So I would submit that perhaps the proper solution for this, to benefit all the communities around the state, is not to define what a public space is, but rather provide a very simple exception. And I suggested some text along those lines, and would simply say, if I may quote this, that section would then be modified to read, it is unlawful to consume marijuana in public except on the premises of a marijuana establishment operating under a state or local license or permit. I believe that that pretty much solves the problem. Then, if the Marijuana Control Board comes up with another permit type or business type, it's already been addressed in state statute. That's a permit, that's a classification, whether it's temporary, seasonal, or otherwise, that would be issued under whatever parameters are deemed appropriate, and then marijuana consumption would be lawful. Everyone would understand that it is because, in fact, they are operating under a permit. I think that gives us the greatest latitude to evolve this industry over the next few years without having to come back to the legislature every time. And I believe it's the most concise solution to the problem that I've seen yet.
Questions? Yes, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Mr. Schulte, as I mentioned to the folks before, if you have some specific language and could get that to us, then we could see that and get people's views on it. That would be helpful for me.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I apologize. I emailed my notes in this morning, but it was very late. It was, I don't think it was even an hour before you.
I actually do think you've got that.
I see it now.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask Mr. Hilliard to come up and comment on that.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to respond. At first blush, Mr. Schulte's recommendation could seem reasonable. Again, this has been HB 75 is essentially the work product of the municipalities. And so in keeping with the overall process, I mean, my response would be to reach back out to the municipalities and their attorneys to have them weigh in. And if the municipalities and their attorneys say we think this is acceptable, then that would be fine. Again, this is their work product that we're just shepherding. So,
thank you. Any further questions for either Mr. Hilliard or Mr. Schulte? All right. Well, then. And is there anybody else in the audience or online that would like to testify? Then I am going to. I'm not going to close public comments right now because we're going to be continuing on hearing this bill. But I am going to adjourn the meeting. It is 2:40, and the next meeting will be on Friday at 1 o'clock.
But you're going to be gone.
That's correct.